was always in East Baltimore. And they had a house over there someplace. There were never more than 8 to 10 people that you could actually identify with the Black Panthers. When they would come out on the street, they would try to solicit some of the young children in the area to cast signs and do things. Mm-hmm. But you know, but very few people wanted to identify themselves with the Black Panther. With CORE, yes, people joined. Also, that was an outside agency. So you see, these agencies came into town from 1966 on. NAACP has been well established here. The Urban League has been well established here. So this is an outside group. And all of the people came from the outside. So in Baltimore, your Freda Coleman's and your James Griffin's, them joined CORE. So that gave them a base here in Baltimore with some people that they could bring to work with them. And they were doing a lot of things. They were trying to have educational programs. They were trying to have building up 2 or 3 garages or filling stations. So they were trying to create job opportunities for Black people. Mm-hmm. That's what they were. But the Panthers always were against this and against everything. They didn't have any, in other words, they did not come up with any recommendation to do constructive things. If they did, nobody would pay attention to them.
They didn't try and set up any of the kinds of programs that they'd set up.
Oh, yes, they did. They had a
free breakfast.
Food, yeah, they had a food program. This church up on Eagle Street, they had this this food program, and that ran for a little while, but that didn't last.
What was that in the first couple of years, or?
No, that was in the later years, I think. Mm-hmm. That was after the riots, I think, when they had that. And I think they were just trying to hang on, you know. That was the only constructive thing that they ever did, that free breakfast thing. And that did not work because the kids that should have gotten it didn't come, you know, and they were throwing the food away. But you see, they could not get the identification with anyone here in Baltimore that would pick it up and say, we're going to help, you know, the Black Panthers here in Baltimore. All their support and help was coming out of the state.
Mm-hmm. Were they involved in the riots? Were they?
Well, we could not say they were. We figured that mm-hmm. they were. We feel, when I say we, I'm talking about Maryland Obama City Point, we feel that they were quite instrumental in a lot of things that happened. But you can't accuse a person until you have the facts.
Could you give me any specific examples of where you thought they were behind the scenes, but there's nothing, you know?
Right. Okay, well, we feel that they were partly responsible for the burning of the stores over on King Street. That was one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main one. But then there were very instances where, you know, they were seen at different spots, but nothing concrete. In fact, none of them were, and we had guys that we knew, like, and then you had another group too called the Soul School. They were here during the time. This was with a guy named Rubala and Shotgun Green and all these kind of people. But we could not actually pin the Panthers down and say anything, but we felt that they were responsible for some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that Baltimore City Police Department in Intelligence Division had a dossier on each one of them, but that was not my thing to become involved with that. Mine was just to work with the community to bring them close together.
Right.
But anything of that type, the intelligence division, up to about 2 years ago, they had a record on everybody there, but I think all records had to be destroyed. You know, they were destroyed. I think the Attorney General said you could not keep a file on any of these organizations anymore. And I understand the Baltimore City Police Department destroyed their files. In fact, I know that they said that. Because I called up since I've been here to try to get information on some guy that I knew had been part of the Panthers, and the man in charge told me that they did not have any more records. But he knew something off the top of his head that we have had.
Yeah. What about Mr. Young?
Okay.
What?
Well, Cheeky Young to me was a victim of circumstances. I feel that old Cheeky was part of the group. He was quite involved in the group. But the murders and the killings that they had claimed that he was involved in, they did not have any facts showing where, you know, where he was actually involved. The man went back to school, pursued an education. That's when I became involved with him, because what he was trying to do. And I felt that he would be more, well, I guess he could do a much, much more of a job out here in the community helping people than by remaining in jail. And I just, you know, I have a warm feeling for people trying to help themselves. And there was nothing on his record showing where he was that bad. And he was just part of a group that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then this murder over in Beacon Park, where, you know, he was part of. They don't have any, they didn't have any concrete evidence that he killed the man. You know.
Has anything...
And everybody else was, got was released, and he went to jail.
How many other people were originally arrested?
Could have been three or four, I guess. Another three got off and Ochigo went to jail.
Mm-hmm. Has anything been done as far as you made the recommendation 2 years ago? And he's up for parole.
Oh, he's out.
He's out now.
He's out. He's been out. He's been working with various agencies within the state. I think right now he could be working with You know, there was a woman, a professor at the Morgan College, who used to write me letters all the time about Ochigo. That's how I became involved.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on this program where they allowed him to come out and go to school. And he won his degree from Morgan College. And then, but I don't know what he's doing now. I just lost track after he came out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
He did call me a little while ago, recently, said he was looking for another job. He worked at the Morgan College for another while.
Excuse me, what job did
Ochigo
have at
the
Morgan College?
They had a program out there called University Without Walls.
Oh, yes.
He worked with that program.
What was the Soul School?
A Soul School was a group of men and women. They were down on Fremont Avenue in Baltimore. And it was an activist group. And they always would show up on the scene, and they were hollering, screaming for anytime there was a case that they claimed about police brutality, whenever anybody was arrested, they always would show up on the scene with the cameras and trying to take a picture of the policemen making the arrests, you know, that kind of thing. And that was they called themselves more of a protective organization for the black people. And they were out involved with housing for black people. You know, everybody had the same thing, you know. And but when you talk about, see all these groups, like you talk about Soul School, you talk about CORE, you talk about the Black Panthers, all of these were groups that just came about. In fact, they all have gone now. And I understand that CORE still has a group of people here. Understand they have problems right now too, because they're calling on people trying to solicit money for some kind of program that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten calls from people, you know, but I understand it's recognized operations for what they're supposed to. They also were trying to recruit people to go to Angoria, I think at the time. But none of the national leaders that we knew in the 60s, you know, on the scene anymore. Rap Brown's in jail, Stokely Carmack is going around making speeches, promoting. George Lewis, who was one of the founders of SNCC, they had an office here in Baltimore too, SNCC. And that didn't last long.
Do they have the same problems as
the SNCC? Yeah. But SNCC, no. SNCC and CORE were in a different classification than the Panthers and Soul School. You know, SNCC was George Lewis. SNCC was a young guy that started in college. He didn't start with Carmichael and all that. But these are, you see, SNCC, CORE were made up of young college people, right? The Panthers had no college or school or background. When I say background, I'm sure that you could have been some people there with master's or doctor's degrees, but I'm saying they did not have, they start in a school. Most of these organizations start in school, had chapters on branches or campuses of school, but not the Panthers. The Panthers to us was a, well, the picture to us in the Baltimore City Sports Bar were a bunch of guys with guns and rifles and that kind of thing. Corps and Snake Nose organization didn't have that kind of background, or either the soul school people. There were no guns or that kind of bombing.
Mm-hmm.
But every time you were ready to Panthers headquarters, you would find guns and dynamite, you know, that's, those kind of things. So that's why most of the people here did not pick up with the members of the Black Panthers.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of problems did SNCC particularly have here?
Well, the same thing that Corps and all of them had. They couldn't get a foothold or a base. You know, Lincoln Lynch, I don't know if you know, he was a national figure. Okay, and James Farmer. They both told me, he said, I was in Mason Major High. He said, look, this is the only town where the blacks don't want nothing to happen. He said, we can't get a damn thing started here in Baltimore. He said, every time that we're trying to come here and say that they need more black people working in the phone company, and we come to your office and say we're going to demonstrate in front of the phone company, you pick up the phone and call Mr. Well, then it was Mercer Smith, he was head of the phone company, and he would have the, he said, well, come down, we'll show you what we have. You know, and then there was a black man by the name of Roland Henson that worked for the phone company. And Roland Henson was, sure, someone will come, and they would relate. Or they would say, there are no blacks in the gas and electric company. At that time, I knew who was the chairman of the board. And I said, look, we have a problem. He said, well, no, time to come down. And we always resolved. He said, God damn it, will you stop helping us? We don't need no damn help. So that was the kind of thing. Everybody in Baltimore, just like your Dave Blanchard, we all jumped on the bandwagon to help them, to, you know, things that they were saying that were wrong. You see, you can come in and say things are wrong, but if you don't have any knowledge other than what you heard, if you get a chance to see what's going on. Oh, I'm not saying that we got the best system. Yeah, we still got a lot of problems. I'm still the phone company got a lot of problems. But they were saying that there were no switchboard operators or there were no call or no whatever you have in the phone company. And they went down and talked to the people and they were satisfied with what they saw. And they were, you know, I guess they claim to be equal opportunity employee like everyone else. But when they had problems, they could talk with the people, and I think they would try to adjust with what they were saying. When the members of Corps would go down and talk with the phone company people, they came out very much satisfied, and they did not throw any lines around it, you see. So this was, I thought, was my role, because once they became involved with the police, then I mean, the arrests would have to be made. So that's why the Baltimore City Police Department became so involved in the whole movement. Because if any fights or riots break out, it would be our responsibility, so we can do anything before the fact. So it was my position to find out who were the top people in various positions. Who was the chairman or the president of the junior chairman conference? Who was the president of the Kiwanis Club? Who was the president of the Lions Club? You know, all these kind of things to let them know what was happening in the city and any kind of aid I could solicit from them. Each head of a religious organization in Baltimore was involved in this. The cardinal of the Catholic Church was involved. The number one man in the Presbyterian Church, the number one man in the Baptist Church. All churches were involved. In fact, they had people working with me. Each one of them, top people would have, I had Catholic priests working with me, Baptist ministers working with me, I had Presbyterians working with me, I had Lutherans working with me. Everybody became involved. And that was the thing that helped Baltimore a lot, because it became involved. And Tom and D'Alessandro, I'm talking about in 68 now, and Tom and D'Alessandro became totally involved himself, and he gave his whole staff the responsibility of working with the people of the community.
Were there other people? I mean, there were lots of people involved, of course. But what about the Mitchells?
The Mitchells have always been involved. Just on account of their grandmother. But, you know, if you look at that family right now, I guess they're the only family in the country that has representatives in every facet of state and city and federal government. Clarence Sr. is called the 101st a senator, you know, because he's in Washington, the ACP. Okay, his brother, whose parent is a United States congressman. Okay, his son is the state senator from his district. His other son is a councilman. You see? So I'm saying is that, so they have been involved, when those boys were young kids growing up, they were walking around with picket signs because a grandma had them out first and people like me, that Harris and other people come out. But the Mitchells, well, they were always on the scene, the Jacksons. Ma Jackson would bring everybody up. And those young boys were out making speeches when they were young kids.
What about the judges? You mentioned a few of them earlier.
Well, see, most of the judges were legal representatives for the NAACP. I think if you want to go back, Thurgood Marshall was one of the first, because he's from Baltimore, you know. He's a judge of the Supreme Bench.
Right.
So starting back with him, then you had Judge Hastie from Washington. So these are your prime moves. But here in Baltimore City, Judge Robert Watts, Judge Harry Cole, Judge George Russell, Judge William Murphy, and I can go on. But all these young men served free of charge. In other words, whenever there were any problems that blacks had, Dr. Lloyd Jackson would call one of these young men. Oh, yeah, and you have another one, Milton Allen. He's a judge now, too. And then there are a lot of others. There are a lot of them still practice now, like Attorney Daring. His name is Tucker Daring, D-A-R-I-N-G. And he's still out there fighting. But these are the kind of guys. The rest of the guys are sent to the bench. All of them have become more judges. But these young men, when they finish University of Maryland Law School, the first thing what they do, they work with Dr. Jackson.
I understand, I'm not sure, but I understand, I guess it was in the late 60s, I'm not sure whether it was before or after the riot, there was some kind of shakeup in City Hall. Now, what was mentioned to me is a man by the name of, who's not on your list, Joseph Howard, I believe.
Joe Howell.
Yeah.
Won an election. Here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you, all judges are appointed by the governor of the state. Okay. Now you and all of the legal people usually go for the sitting judges when they have to run for election. Joe Howell was an outsider and ran against the judges. He ran against the sitting judges. And he won the seat. And Milton Allen ran against the state's attorney and won. And a fellow named Paul Chester won the spot as the clerk of the court. So these three black men ran on a ticket, ran against the establishment. The establishment had these judges who were sitting in the spots who had been appointed by the government. And Joe Howard won a 15-year term.
When was that?
I don't know Joe been in there. I guess Joe must be about 94. I don't know. What's this? 76? I guess he won it in 1970, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And Milton Allen won as state attorney, and Paul Chester won. And when you ask about Joe Howard, see, Joe Howard came here from Des Moines. He didn't finish it, and then he worked for the power of, then he became a probation officer when he came. Then he went to the University of Maryland's law school.
How were their elections viewed?
Was that Joe Howe?
Yeah.
Well, what happened, that's why, you see what happened when Milton Allen ran for re-election this time, he lost. Were you here in Baltimore when this was happening? No. He ran. he ran well, just this past time.
Yeah.
And then he's since been appointed, you know, to the bench or by the governor. But the establishment ran somebody against him this time. Well, Swisher. They ran Swisher against him, who's the state's attorney. Well, oh yes, what happened? See, this was unheard of. You know, you don't beat the sitting judges because you have all of this support. You have the Baltimore City Bar Association, you have the Monumental Bar Association, you got the Maryland Bar Association. And once the judge is on the bench, you know, he runs for election, well, everybody rallies around it. But they fought the system, and they beat the system, all three of them. So that was a remarkable feat that has never happened and won't ever happen again.
How was that accomplished?
Well, because everybody, in fact, the total black community worked together in putting these guys in with the help of some whites. And then the whites has split up their people. You see, you see what happens. The whites ran three candidates, and the blacks ran one candidate.
Mm.
You see? That has always been the fault of the black community. We always run four or five people for a job, for a position, and we always wind up losing. Whites would run one person. That's what happened in my area in the 5th Council Mag district I told you before. We ran two men for a seat. And neither one, if we had one man, we could have won.
How did that happen? I mean, it happens all the time.
Well, it happens all the time, right. But what happened, at this time, we were supposed to have a unified ticket. And we were coming out for one man, but they had to break down in communication between some of our elected officials and someone that had one man, someone another, so they couldn't come up with one name.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ran two people.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not come out and vote the way that we should. You see, that's one thing about the city of Baltimore. The Jewish people vote. They out there. You know, the blacks don't vote in mass like they should.
Have you ever considered running for office? Or do you feel that what you're doing is the most important and
I've
most
heard,
interesting?
You know, I've been asked a number of times. But once you become a politician, then you have to choose sides. My philosophy has always been to be able to walk the middle of the road. If a Republican's in, I can work with him. If a Democrat's in, I can work with him. Now, I'm a resident, a Democrat, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe, you know, I still believe in the two-party system. When I say two-party system, I mean I want to be able to work with the Republicans as well as the Democrats. And who I was in, that's the man I want, or the woman I want to work with. I've been offered jobs during the Republican administration. In fact, when Calvin appointed me, he was Republican. Appointed me the first black parole probation officer and the first black United States Marshal. Mandel appointed me to the police department also here. So I'm saying that I have been able to work that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have no ambition to become involved politically. And I've heard, I've had whites and, as well as blacks, and no, you know, you're a good candidate. We want you to run. I feel I can do more this way. Now, I don't know what my next move is after this. You see, I serve at the pleasure of the governor, and the governor
mm-hmm.
goes out in 1978. So I don't know what's going to happen at that point.
Mm-hmm.